A quiet revolution is underway in the nation's, indeed the world's, libraries and archival collections. A massive digitisation process by institutions who are already struggling under steadily eroding budgets. As they scramble to keep up, decisions have to be made about which materials to prioritise and who they should be made available to. In the second of our two-part series on collections, I'm delighted to welcome this time David Fricker, Director General of the National Archives of Australia, and Sue McKerricker, CEO of the Australian Library and Information Association, which is the peak body for people working in the library sector. Both are in our Canberra studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
David, before we get to the challenges of digitising the existing hard copy materials, could you tell us about the brave new world of what you folk are referring to as born digital?
Well, the role of the archives, the National Archives of Australia, of course, is to keep the evidence of what the Commonwealth Government has done. And the evidence of what the Commonwealth Government has done is all created in digital form these days. The work of government is done through emails, it's done through electronic documents, it's kept on databases, and it's promulgated through social media. So it's all born digital. So if we want to capture that evidence and keep it for the future generations of Australians, we have to grab it early in its digital form, and then we have to maintain it in an accessible format. And that presents all sorts of new challenges in how do you keep digital information alive and useful and accessible for 10, 20, hundreds of years into the future.
Well, David, of course, I know a lot about your institution, and the main role of it, the National Archives, is to hold and preserve federal government documents, isn't it?
That's right. Well, and I always come back to access as well, Paul. You know, the end of the value chain there is about access. Preservation without access is just hoarding, and that's not what archivists do.
I imagine that some material is harder to capture and track when it originates in digital form. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's, the upside of the digital revolution is that it's very hard to do anything without creating a record. So the opportunities for archiving are much better. But the downside is that digital records are far more vulnerable than the old, you know, paper-based records of old. And so the challenge is to get in there quickly and to act quickly. So if we send a tweet or if we post something on Facebook, it's a wonderful record, but in as little as a week or a month, that could no longer be available. It'll have broken links, or it'll be taken down, or the company that provides that service will have moved on. Mm. So that the whole preservation becomes a lot more urgent than it has been in the past with those old analog-based records.
Sue, if I can bring you into the discussion, in libraries, born digital refers usually to e-books, doesn't it?
Well, it's got a couple of references, really. One is that we have got, you know, the latest Di Morrissey as an e-book in your local public library, and that's definitely digital. But the other thing is that we have people now who would in the past have donated their wonderful letters and manuscripts and diaries, you know, famous people. We would have taken those into a library collection, catalogued it and put it down in our archive. What we're finding now is that people, of course, are donating their digital record. So how do we treat that? So we need to have massive storage capacity. We also still need to catalogue it all. So the idea that digital somehow means cheaper or less time, actually that's a fallacy. It's just as complex. In fact, as David's just said, it can be more complex.
And when we talk about e-books, actually, there's nothing that gets enthusiastic readers more in a fluster than e-books. I was talking actually to an academic about this the other day, and she was bemoaning the slow decline of hard copy books in libraries in favour of e-books. I think she was talking there specifically about scholarly texts. It's interesting, e-books were expected to replace actual books, but this hasn't happened at quite the rate people were anticipating, has it?
Indeed, it hasn't. And I'm embarrassed to say we put out a paper which said, will it be 50-50 by 2020? We've been proved horribly wrong on that front. In libraries, we're looking at probably about 5% of loans are e-books. The rest are print books. Even young people who we thought would go straight to digital, they love the print book. So sure, you know, in our university libraries, more than 90% of purchases for university libraries are now in the electronic format because it's so convenient and it's so useful for these very expensive digital e-resources, you know, journals and scholarly publications. But in public libraries, I can assure you that you'll continue to find print for many, many years to come.
That is reassuring to this dinosaur anyway. David, there are also some questions about social media. As we know, so many of our politicians are on social media these days, and the things they tweet are often rather significant too. How much of that should be captured in the archives?
Well, we issue guidelines and policies, which are binding policies, actually, backed by legislation for any government official. So this would include ministers of the Crown and their staff, as well as all the public servants that work for those ministers. If you issue an important statement or a decision through social media, then you're required by law to keep that as a record, as evidence of what you've done. It's part of our core values in the public service to be accountable for the actions that we've taken. And so it is, it's part and parcel of being a public servant, if you like, a government official in the digital age. It's just part of what you have to do.
Which kind of seems to stand in stark contrast with the disposability of social media, or that's how some people see it anyway.
Yeah, well, digital, you know, we always say that digital records are records on life support. You know, in the good old days, you could put a paper in a box and you could put that box in a dark room for 100 years. It would still be there when you get back. But digital information, you have to keep plugged in, you have to get the power on, the air condition running.
Absolutely.
It is on life support.
Sue, are we talking about replacing physical documents or offering digital versions as well as the physical versions?
We're talking mostly about offering it as well. And there's very good reasons for digitising our collections. For example, you know, in the case of magnetic tape, which I'm sure David will talk about at some point, that if we don't get that digitised by 2025, then we risk actually losing that forever. Mm-hmm. So there's a lost forever element. We also have the option of a digital record that, in the case of a natural disaster where we lose documentary heritage, we'll still have the digital record. It's not as good necessarily as feeling that object in your hands, that piece of paper in your hands, but actually we know that that's important. The other thing is that by digitising our collections, we can make them available online for researchers, for family historians, for artists who want to use them. So they don't have to travel to our libraries. So if you're in Perth, you don't have to travel to Canberra to access the National Library's collection. You just go on to Trove, there it is. Mm. That's what we're trying to achieve. It's not about getting rid of the print collection.
Yes, David, let's talk about, as Sue said there, the urgency really in dealing with some of that old magnetic tape. I have some old programs of mine from the beginning of my career as a broadcaster that kind of has sentimental value, and I've subsequently realised that some of it is now unplayable. It's just decayed to such a point. But there are, of course, far more important things than that in the archive. How urgent is it to get that stuff digitised?
Oh, look, it is very urgent. It's, you know, as Sue said, the international consensus is by the year 2025, stuff kept on magnetic tape will not be readable. The tape will have deteriorated, the machinery to play it would have broken down, no parts will be available, and the people that understand how to engineer that machinery will have long since retired and perhaps passed away altogether. We, in the archives, we have 220,000 hours of unique audiovisual records of Australian life on magnetic tape. We've digitised some of it, but we've still got almost 130,000 hours that we must digitise. And you've got to remember, this is unique. You know, once that tape goes, there is no other record of that content. Mm. And this holds things like land title claims, you know, the proceedings of land title claims, and that contains evidence of Indigenous occupation of various parts of Australia, Indigenous language. We have footage of Indigenous ceremonies. We've got ASIO surveillance footage, CSIRO scientific research. You know, there's a whole range of things that are just so important to be remembered as the accumulated knowledge and resource of Australia that will disappear forever.
Yeah. Well, from the sublime to the ridiculous, I'm going to ask you, Sue, now about the Mills and Boone romance novel collection that you have at the National Library, the biggest collection of Mills and Boone books in the Southern Hemisphere. What on earth are you going to do with all of those books?
Well, just to reassure any listener who thinks that we are collecting romance exclusively at the National Library, I will say it's just a fraction of the collection. But it's a result of legal deposit, which means that every publisher who publishes in Australia needs to lodge a copy of their book in the National Library. And you can imagine that's kilometres of storage that's required for the print book. Now, we have a lot of Mills and Boone's books at the National Library because Mills and Boone publish about 12 books a year. They're the most prolific publisher. We're very happy that now we're taking in Mills and Boone books as e-deposit rather than print deposit, which means that we're saving on kilometres of storage, but we still have that precious preservation copy. So in future years, people can look back and see what Brett and Angela were doing in Paris that day.
Does that mean you're getting rid of the actual hard copy versions of the books?
Well, we can't, because of course this is the preservation copy, yeah, and those that date back to the 1980s, they're not in a digital format. So we've still got print, but we're collecting e as well.
David, what will it cost to digitise the entire collection at the National Archives? This must be a phenomenally expensive operation.
Well, we've, you know, in terms of shelf kilometres, for all you archivists and librarians out there, we've got 380 shelf kilometres of records. We've got 40 million items, so 40 million files. It's probably about 100 million folios. Look, it'd be probably a couple of hundred million dollars to digitise the collection of the archives. We do therefore prioritise, because we don't have a lazy 200 million lying around in the corner of my office. So, you know, we are really focused on digitising the records at risk. The magnetic tape collection, for example, that we're just discussing, that alone would be about $25 million to digitise that, to preserve it and also to make it accessible. So, you know, these are big numbers. I mean, not big in the scale of buying a submarine or something like that, but in terms of what's available in our documentary heritage sector, they're big numbers. But the problem is becoming more and more urgent for us.
And there's a technological challenge here too. Like, for example, a Microsoft Outlook email may no longer exist in 10 years. If you save it in that format, we may not be able to read it in 10 years' time. And this goes for so many digital versions. How do you deal with the fact that technology changes over the years?
Well, when we talk about digital preservation and information being on life support, that's a very good example, Paul. It's technological obsolescence is the big enemy of digital information. You know, you mentioned your tapes that you have of your early work, and many listeners will have a floppy disk maybe even lying around in their house somewhere. We know that you can't get a floppy disk from 20 years ago and expect to find a computer that you can insert that floppy disk into. You know, some of us are old enough to remember products like VisiCalc and WordStar as early versions of word processors, and those products move on and the vendors move on and they're no longer supported. So digital preservation doesn't mean just freezing something in time. It means continuously, it's like painting the Harbour Bridge. You have to continuously work on it to maintain it in an accessible state, but maintain the integrity of the original record.
And all this work, Sue, needs to happen at a time when budgets are shrinking. It makes it an even bigger challenge, doesn't it?
Paul, it's a desperately difficult time for our cultural sector. We're suffering under an efficiency dividend, which is stripping millions out of the sector every year. And it's really a kind of blunt instrument that the government has applied to all government departments. But it's especially hard for the cultural agencies, where we're not talking about departments with thousands of employees, where you can hopefully soak up a couple of percent efficiency dividend each year. What we're talking about is our cultural institutions losing 5% of their budget every year. So, for example, from the National Library perspective, in 2011, they had $49 million of government investment from that the library. That was down to $47 million in 2020. And it should have been up at $57 million because, of course, with CPI, you know, the costs have gone up. So at a time when we've got this huge opportunity and challenge with digital, our cultural institutions are being battered by year after year losing 3-5% of their budget. It just seems just an incredibly daft way to approach this.
No doubt some lobbying going on ahead of the federal election. Look, I'll have to leave it there. It's a fascinating discussion. Thank you very much to Sue McKerricker, CEO of the Australian Library and Information Association, the peak body for people working in that sector, and David Fricker, Director General of the National Archives of Australia. That was the second in our two-part series on collections. Last week, we heard how museums are valuing their obscure artefacts. You can go back and have a listen to that online or as a podcast on the ABC Listen app.